Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, October 10th, Saturday night. Saturday night. Everybody's out looking at the moon tonight, I'm sure. Great show yesterday. That was Thursday, you know, because I'm recording this on Friday, with Steve Barish. Well archived, a lot of information. Recommend you check it out. But as promised, remember now, the shows are on Thursday night at 5 o'clock, not Friday night at 6. It's Thursday at 5. We had about half our audience, I think, so people are getting the message. And I think Thursday night's better because everybody wants to do something privately on Friday anyway. So without any further anything,
let's on the other fire.
This is a continuation from last week, as promised.
So what you do, you turn all the appliances on, you go down to your breaker box, wherever that is in your house, or your fuse box, and you pop the fuse breaker. Maybe this fuse here is A, will blow this circuit out, and this will stay on. Then you go over here to B, and then that circuit will go out. Okay, so you got A and B, so you got two circuits. So that means to make yourself safe in this room, what you have to do is run it. I don't know if you noticed or not, but did you notice that big thing that was in the bird room, the little wires coming off of it? Okay, one string of wires went into the kitchen and hooked onto the refrigerator, because refrigerators are a very big source of noise and pollution, you know, static pollution. So it was hooked to the refrigerator, and also in the kitchen, several of these, and then in the room where the big lasers are, there's wall plugs in there, that's a circuit, and there was wires going into those wall plugs. So all these plugs were now the center wire, not the vertical wire, the little round ones. These are wired together, so it makes a common ground, okay? Then you hang this thing, you run a wire up to this device here, you run easily up the wall here, you run and hook all that ground to this. So all that grounding energy, all that ELF and all that stuff goes into this. Then you take another wire from this, run it outside the house, and down into the ground, and put an iron or copper pole stake and ground it out that way. And that's what you have to do. Huh?
Yeah, you just put it in the ground in the wall.
No, because the ground in the wall is carrying is bad energy.
Oh, it is?
Because
I have mine in my ground to my wall at home.
No, you want to plug it in the ground, in the wall and the ground.
Both of them. It's like I need to splice
the wire. Yeah, you need to take another wire and take it from your thing in the house and run it outside the window. If you're way up in a high-rise apartment or something, use a water pipe. That's the second best thing. Bring everything to a water pipe. Now, they have, what happened to your big Devastar you had here?
Got out in the meeting room.
Oh, okay. We got a bigger size of it. A big place like this needs a bigger one. And so they have one here in this building that's in the other room. It's a very big, giant one. We have different size ones for different applications.
When you hook it to the refrigerator, how do you do that? Where do you put the wire?
Oh, anywhere it's metal. You know, I have mine in the back. Yeah.
You can tape it to the refrigerator?
Well, I'll make sure you got a connection, an electrical connection. You don't want to hook it to the enamel. You want to hook it to the back somewhere where there's a raw, like a screw, you know, sticking out. Hole is usually a hole somewhere. You tie it through the hole. You know, and make sure the wire is there. Mm-hmm. You know, grounding is very important to all these systems. If the system becomes ungrounded, you'll become ungrounded real quick. It'll really flip you out. You're dizzy, fainting spells off. To make you real sick, you know, because you run a lot of energy through it, it'll come backwards. So grounding is very important. And this device is probably one of the least expensive systems things that we have. And even if you don't get anything else in the system, you should have at least one of these things. These are very handy. These are excellent. I have about two or three of these in the house, plus a very big one, you know. And just do a room at a time, and you'll notice the difference. You don't have to do your whole house. Just do one room, one that you're in.
What you're saying is what if your electrical system is grounded properly?
What do you mean, in the ground?
I wired my house, and the ground wire goes to my well, and the ground wire goes to a pool grid. And
then what you want to do, then,
if
you got it grounded properly, then all you need to do is hook this.
My ground is I got like another tube going to my well, just put down.
Yeah.
Iron but down 40 feet.
Yeah, then what you want to do is just hook this into your ground system.
The ground. Okay.
Yeah, and then the whole thing up.
I know my ground is good.
Yeah. Let me explain something about ELF. You want to turn it off? Go ahead. Yeah.
push that button up on the top there. Yeah. So, the ELF generators, there's one down in Sydney, Australia, and this wire goes 2 miles down on the ground into a well shaft. And schematically, if you were to look at a power station, you got a, this is ground here, and you got a transformer, which is ground, and you only carry one high tension wire, And then you get over here, there's one high tension wire, comes to another transformer, it then goes back into ground, and then it has another side of the transformer, and these two wires then go into your house. They're only carrying ground through ground, That's how it's done. So ELF generators generate down into the ground these high frequencies, and these high frequencies skid along on the surface of the wire. They're not in the wire. So when you get ELF in your house, ELF is affecting. I'll show you what it does real quick.
I just remembered, I didn't show you that yesterday.
When you digest your food, you have to have 8 essential amino acids. Why do you have to have 8 essential amino acids? These are all right spin. Why is that? This is inside your body now, the DNA level. Why do you need 8 of them? Why can't you have 7 or 12? Anybody know?
There are 20 amino acids in your
food. There's 20 amino acids, but you need 8 essential ones.
Right.
Yeah, well, the reason you need them is the summation frequency of 3.58 megahertz. That's why you need them. If the frequency, the vibratory frequency of the DNA, if it doesn't reach 3.58, you can't assimilate anything. Okay? So then, what happens is here comes the old tomato with the arsenic on it, right? Left spin now. That's why everything is always left spin. Well, this could be any protein molecule, anything. So what happens is, as soon as this gets in, this transmits at 3.58 megahertz, which is now called a messenger RNA signal, okay, which is a viral signal, the virus. Boom, goes over here, and it looks at this, it scans this tomato that you just ate, but there's typically a lot of arsenic and stuff on it. Then what happens is if the tomato's okay, it will then disconnect a section of it, and through the action of chromium, which is a reflective mineral, bring this over. Now it's transfer RNA, and we'll bring this over here and connect it to this DNA ladder, if everything is proper. Okay? But what it is everything is not proper. So, but still the body does this. It's like a sonar, like a bat flies. It's the same principle. It's the same frequency of these. So this is not working right. So what happens is, why isn't this working right? Because ELF comes in here and blocks this. ELF comes in here and tricks this protein assimilation process, and it brings the poison around, and even though the poison is sitting over here is a right spin, and this was a left spin, it doesn't care. It brings everything over and makes it bind up. So you end up with right spin over here and left spin over here. Left spin on this side is poison. Left spin on this side is healthy. It's like looking at yourself in a mirror. It's a transfer that has to take place. And that's where consciousness assimilates something from the real world. Yeah.
I actually have a sorrow with it grounded.
Yeah.
But I have something from Expo I bought 2 years back. It's supposed to be a Tesla coil.
Yeah.
And what I've done is I take my computers and where everything's plugged in, then they're supposed to put that coil right on the wire that goes in. I wonder if that, I'm doing the same thing. It's supposed to affect the spin so it goes the other way.
Well, yeah, that's the effect. I don't have to see it. There's a lot of devices that are out there. Some of them work and some of them don't. So this is what's really important. But why is this important? Why can't you just go on in life and let this, like bright spin on this side is chiari, strychnine, cyanide, that's what it is, arsenic. But why is this process so critical? Why does Russia, for example, the KGB, they attacked the U.S. one time in a magazine, Pravda magazine, saying, and that damn CIA sends these horrible waves to affect the psychological consciousness of our populace, they said. And it was in 1978 that we discovered ELF on the grid wires of the American embassy in Moscow. I mean, like, what a grip, and what's going on. But why do they do this? Does anybody know? If you remember yesterday, you can tell me.
It unravels them.
No, but why do they do this to people? What is the effect?
Shortens their lifespan.
How? Or does it? There's a better answer. Remember that chart I drew on there yesterday? What's this first box?
What?
No. Minerals. And minerals control what percent of your body? 95%. Right? And then what comes after minerals?
Enzymes.
We talked about the hydrogen atom. And we also forgot to tell you that the hydrogen atom, if you're used to getting up in the morning at a certain time and polarizing that way, changing your consciousness, if you get on a plane and go somewhere, that throws that off. And jet lag is a misadaption of the hydrogen atom. It has to re-identify itself. Enzymes, then what came next?
Vitamins.
Okay, vitamins. And then what came next? Protein, right. And what were we talking about over here? Protein, right? So if I screw it up on this level, what's going to happen here? And what's going to happen here?
No hormones.
That's going to affect this, right. And what's it going to do? What are the hormones? First, in the biochemistry that possess consciousness, right? So what's it going to do? If you screw it up here, what's happening to your consciousness down here? Think that's why you need to get rid of ELF. And it's one of the most dangerous things there is. There's a book by Rosenthal and Eisenbud. It's written on the Russian studies. So you can get. I had it at home, but I forget the name of the publisher. But I have this book, and you can buy them at the Bodhi Tree, and it talks about all the tests that the Russians did on humans, the ELF frequencies, and how destructive they are.
They had it yesterday night on Discovery Channel.
Did they?
An hour special.
Yeah. It's very, very real. It's very important. It's very important because, see, when you have the ground, the way they do it, the ground wire in your house, you think it's ground. Yeah, it's ground. It's electric is ground. It's grounding out. You know, if you plug your stereo when you're not going to hear the speakers. But ELF don't work that way. ELF is skimming along the top of those ground wires. So now you need to grab that skim and ground that out. So it's like a filter. You got to grab this energy, filter it, and send it back to the ground. But first of all, you got to do like he did and get all your grounds together. Because it'll come dancing along this ground. You ground that one out, it's dancing on the other side of the room. See? So you got to get all the grounds. Some people, if your house is right, you go down into your circuit box, you find a common ground for everything, and then you can ground it that way, but it has to be done.
Actually, I want to ask you about that. They showed a device to interview the pastor of the KGB.
Yeah.
To trap psychic powers.
Uh-huh.
And it was transportable, and they could release it and direct it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was some of my work originally. The very first one of those we ever made and marketed, the KGB came right over here and bought it. Instantly. Oh, yeah. And up at Aspen, years ago, the ski school up there, they used these irradiators and made all their new students wear these, and they wouldn't have accidents. It would eliminate the psychic tension that causes you to have an accident. Because an accident, when you fall out of skiing, is just some kind of fear. You eliminate the fear. Oh, yeah. The next. I got a Mercedes convertible. So he's on my doorstep with his reporter who's following me around the house. And they finally, both two of the better alleys in the Lamont guy got me in the Bonaventure Hotel in the basement doing a lecture down there. They hit me at the same time, you know. And this is out there. And this is back in the early days, you know. Another incident that was really cute was in 1978. We were, in those days, I remember very well, gold was a dollar. $125 an ounce. So the pyridome, we didn't have the titanium pyramids in those days. The pyridome, which was just a steel wire and a gold plate on it. And then we had the fire dome, which was a steel wire and a gold plate and silver over that. I mean, copper over that. And then the radome, which was the same with the silver over it. That's all we had. And it was, the whole set was $39.95. So it was $9.95 for the.
God.
That was the whole thing. That's how cheap stuff was. This is back in 1978. The whole set. You know, for the first year when we designed the gold pyramid, that was our. I was 5 house payments behind because I couldn't figure out. I'd sold my electronics company. I'd spent all my money. I'd retired for 10 years. I was 5 house payments behind. And I came out with this gold pyramid. You know, because we found it would put you in the alpha state for my clinic, and we started selling it. And I started wearing it. And pretty soon we're on TV, you know, the first week that we come out with these pyramids, it's all the product we had in those days, one pyramid.
And the market we ended up with was the Valium market. Because the biggest drug addict in those days was the American housewife strung out on Valium. That was before the days of cocaine in the 80s. So, and pot had already been precedent from the 60s. So I was up there at this hotel, and there was this little, very attractive, younger housewife-looking woman was there, a blonde, blue eyes, really very pretty, actually. I was just plain. I had a suit and tie. I used to wear a suit and tie. I had very short hair in those days, pretty straight. And I'm wearing a pyramid, and the National Health Federation, we're at the Portland Hilton, and half of the people in there wearing suits, pyramids on. This lady is just like, what in the hell is this shit, you know? And she just kept coming back to our booth and staring at it, and then like, not knowing, I could just read her mind. What the hell are these people doing? She'd go away, but she'd come back again, and she couldn't go away. She just could not go away. And so after about half a day of this, I says, come over here, you know. Get this pyramid on your head right now. But don't put this off anymore. She slapped a pyramid on her head. She's walking around. She says, I think I'll take all three of these. And she took all three of the pyramids and instantly left the place. I never saw her again. And I didn't hear about her until a few years later when she started writing these books. And she started channeling. She took the pyramids home. She started channeling this old warrior that, you know, this 500-year-old warrior. And then his name was Rampa. And then the first thing she finally did is attribute that her change of consciousness. This is a person that had no idea about metaphysics, suddenly became, you know, a Rampa channel, and her name is Jay-Z Knight. So it's like, I've seen some amazing things. I got a call one time, 2 o'clock in the morning, from Sky Lewis, from the Wilton School, not Wilton, but the Arcot Union School System in San Luis Obispo. This was in 1978, a testimonial in my book, Death of Ignorance. And he says, we had this kid named Stan Alms, and he was a grand mal patient all his life. He's 9 years old. He was dyslexic. And he's had this pyramid on for a month now. He hasn't had a seizure in 2 weeks, and he's reading from left to right like he's supposed to now. We think the pyramid is responsible. And it was. Because it created electricity in the brain so that the lithium therapy and the mineral therapy that they give him, the drug-laced mineral, would work. And he never had a seizure after that. So I had the same thing with cocaine babies and seizures. 3-month-old kids, we put these grid systems over their cradles and stuff. So we had a hell of a lot of medical exposure. And I used to do the college lecture circuit. And there's my pyramids are, my God, they're all over the world. NASA used them. And like I said, they were in the McMartin pretrial case. I mean, that right on television there the other night, see, they were talking about wearing the pyramids, you know. Because they tried to say that if you wore the pyramid, you were a child abuser, you know. That didn't work. Everybody just laughed at that. One of the reasons why they threw the guy. That's what the prosecution said. But the defense, you know, they stuck it right up in the other way, and suddenly the pyramid, everybody in the courtroom wanted to have a pyramid on their head, you know. I mean, these things have been around.
Well, does it help to put a crystal in this? If I put a crystal in this, pointing down, would it accentuate it?
No, it doesn't really matter. You don't really need to. You know, the way we developed the radome, the silver one, was back in the 70s from a guy named Lawrence Kennedy. His son was, we had Uri Geller, Lawrence Kennedy, and Chris Kennedy. And Chris used to do these psychic explosions. He could walk into a room and every piece of silverware and every metal pan would just explode and bend and crinkle up. It was from his energy. So we began to research that and we found that we could teach people how to use that energy. So we used to have in Lake Tahoe, we had a big house up there. We trained people how to do spoon bending and metal bending with their mind. And everybody was required to wear a pyramid. And the ones in the beginning that didn't wear a pyramid, we got an 80% success rate. And then we started going 100% with the pyramids on it. We made it mandatory, and then we had 100% success rate with that, with the kinesiology stuff that we used to do. The Russians really jumped on my work, but now they're doing, you know, they're doing their own thing. The last skirmish I had with them was really fun because, did you notice those paintings in my house last night, the one over the fireplace?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those paintings I did years ago when I first became a contactee. As a matter of fact, a lot of those paintings I did before I was a contactee, you know, because it was starting to happen. This transfer of energy was happening. And I was a NASA scientist and an engineer, and then when I left the aerospace industry, you know, I had reached a tremendous level of fame. I was in, you know, they have their own publications, they have electronic news, and these magazines that go nationwide. I've been like on the front cover of it, and I was very controversial, but always discovering and making things happen. I was good at marketing. I was the one that started all the, you know, if you go to Radio Shack, you'll see electronic voltmeters, you'll see oscilloscopes, B&K, all that stuff. I was the one that brought all that to this country. I brought all the Japanese equipment, test equipment in that field over here. I was the first one to do it because the Americans were so strong. Like people like Tektronix, all these companies were just, the Japanese couldn't get in here. And I says, wait a minute, these people got better equipment. Let's go for expertise and technology in the hell of the goddamn American system. Their stuff's junk. And I brought it in and went to these conventions, and I launched this whole field, a mega million dollar field when I was younger. Because that's what I used to do. But I did it with expertise. When I was a consultant after I left NASA, I have it at home in my own diaries, the names and addresses of 2,000 American companies. And in each company, 100 different engineers and scientists that I personally worked with. So I had been, in the beginning of the 70s, in every defense plant, every IBM plant, every computer plant in the United States and some in Canada. Every single major plant, EG&G in Las Vegas, Los Alamos, all over in underground places in Texas, all those in, we used to go up to, this Alma, what was the name of that damn place? It's right outside of Austin, way out in the middle of nowhere. And I used to go in there in these bunkers, where nuclear bombs were an instrument, these things that babysitted these bombs, you know. I used to go into IBM plants, and way back on the East Coast. I used to go to Bell Telephone in Murray Hill, working with all these things, because my job was an instrumentation engineer. So I worked on psychic experiments, I worked on moon landing, space simulators, nuclear generators, computers, ILS contracts, which are high-tech lasers, Star Wars. I worked on everything, and I had a hell of a resume. So I was very famous when I got into this. And I had to leave all that behind. And everybody thought I was crazy, because one day I said, you know, I'm just tired of this shit. I'm at the top. I can do whatever I want, and I don't want to do any of it anymore. And I just walked away. You know? I walked away, got myself a hit of acid, took an acid trip for a year, and then realized that other things, and started playing with Tibetan masters and started another life. You know, and that's what I've done since then. It's amazing. But having that background and bringing, you know, having that marketing background, when I got into this field, naturally, everybody was watching me, and science was watching me. So pyramid technology and the stuff that we do is very much in a lot of these big companies now. I mean, sound systems have been developed using the technology because we showed that the best speaker is a pyramid. It's exponentially perfect for the human ear if you make a speaker cone in the shape of a pyramid. And then I started getting into time travel stuff. We started compressing the pyramid down to a flat shape. It was called planar, exponential planar science. And I forget, the IBM started getting into that. And what we do is put this flat pyramid in a carbon, nitrogen, liquid nitrogen environment. And you could now receive signals from the astral plane, energies from the spiritual world. We started doing stuff like that. I've got articles on it. I've got a piece of some of that equipment even at home. But this is where I had gone. This is way back in the 70s. You know, this is the 90s now. Can you imagine where we are now? You know, and we made tremendous jumps into technology, but to express that technology to people. You know, I built a time machine here in Laguna in 1981, which I had here for 5 years, which was a giant Wilson cloud chamber that you would go inside and experience, you know, zero time. We've done a lot of interesting things. And this systems technology that we're playing with now, it looks simple on the outside, but it goes very deep. It gets very heavy when you really start getting a hold of it and you start working with the energy, you know. It becomes your life. I mean, it's a pleasant way, but it keeps you away from all this. It keeps you away from the negative things that go on that you read about people in the paper and all that. You're somehow or other protected from all of that all the time. So it's really amazing. Anyway, let's go on to another slide here. We talked about the star orb. Now, I think the next thing to do is to do this meditation now. If I can get the music on. Put that galactic meditation on. Now what I want to do is I'll show you the slide first. There was an airplane flying from the Homeotronic Laboratories in No, out of, what's the name of that town? Newport News, in the Cumberland Valley, a Navy base back there. You know, all this secret psychic work that goes on in research is financed by the Naval Bureau of Ships. I don't know if you know that or not. When Bob Lazar came forward and claimed that he'd been in Area 51 and the government tried to deny it, when they looked at his W-2 form, it was the Naval Bureau of Intelligence, and it was did show that, in fact, he did work there. It was just to try to cover up because he was releasing the information, you know. So they're the ones, the Navy, believe it or not, is the most powerful military group around. And what I'm going to do now, anyway, this plane was taking pictures over the Cumberland Mountain. And what it did is it went back and it photographed from the air different crops that were being hit by locusts. Locusts are sometimes a problem in this country, especially in the Midwest. They come, a swarm of them and eat your whole crop up in a couple of hours, you know, and they fly out to eat somebody else's. So there was a lot of blighted crops. So what they did is they took pictures of these crops and these locusts, and they took it back to a laboratory in the Plumiatronic Laboratory in Virginia, and they had the farmer. You had to have the farmer of whose land, because this is their connection, you know. So they had the farmer for each picture. They had the farmer who owned that farm have a black box. They put the picture in the black box of the locust and stuff and the bug, and then they put a poison in there in the black box. And then every day there was a dial on there which exposed the insecticide to the picture, and it had to be done every day. The farmer had to dial this thing up where it would expose it to this chamber where the picture was. And about 6 to 8 weeks later, all the locusts and everything and bugs in his fields were all dead. You know, they were killed by what they call a mysterious force. You know, that was the way that radionics came to America. In England, they've been using it a lot longer for the healing side of it versus the killing side of it. But that is the energy that, and it was patented in 1947. All these equipments here work under the license of the T. Gale and Hieronymus patents. The guy that discovered this was T. Galen Brown, was a friend of mine. We knew each other for a number of years before he passed on. And he developed the concept of what these systems are. And like I say, you can use them for whatever. But if you were to use one of these systems to harm someone in some way or destroy them, I could just say, because of the way the systems work, if you wanted to, say, off somebody or kill them, I would recommend that you shot them or had somebody do it or use a knife or something. I wouldn't recommend doing this because the karma will come back on you a lot quicker and cleaner for what you did than it will here. Because here, you're playing around with a lot of forces, and you might be able to clean up the destruction of another human being in one or two lifetimes. This might take you 10 or 20, you know. So, just be careful if you're going to use them for this. I've never seen anybody use them for the wrong reasons. Usually they get taken away from them before they're able to do anything like that. Now, what I'm going to do is read this here a little bit. And we've been talking about the chakras, because when you start working with systems, you're working with chakra technology. And how many of you guys have read the book Death of Ignorance and read and understood the section in here on chakras? Mm-hmm. It's probably better if I explain it to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. We told you that the chakras are receiving points. Chakras are force centers or points of connection at which energy flows from one vehicle or body of man to another. Anyone who possesses a slight degree of clairvoyance may easily see them in the etheric double. And it talks about they show themselves as saucer. This is on page 131, where they show it as saucer-like depressions or vortexes. So basically, the chakra is the energy, the vibration, coming in with the seven levels of consciousness and hitting the body at the vagus nerve. It hits it with a consciousness, okay? It's triggered by the hydrogen atom and it's triggered by the carbon-shaped molecule of the actual nerve structures themselves. Because it's coming from within. It's not coming from out there. There is a force that does come from out there. And when it comes in to the internal forces that are there, that's when you get the wheel, the chakra starts to rotate. You get a motion, a rotating motion. And as it turns, it laces. It's like a bicycle wheel with spokes. And the bicycle wheel is the seven levels of consciousness because the pyramids in the divine form of the spokes But now the spokes are meshing with outside, like laser-like, stellar influence, like from the Pleiades, where we are now, lunar energy. It's lacing, and that energy is a physical energy, lacing with a spiritual energy. And this takes place in what are called stripes. In other words, the stripes, there's four stripes at the base of the spine, there's 960 in the crown chakra. And there's 32, and there's 64 in the Muladhara. All these different chakras in the body have different points of contact. So what this that defines is not the 960 or the four, it only defines one connection. You follow me? Because they're all the same. And just more, all you gotta do is amplify this 960 times for the head chakra versus four times for the base of the spine, what I'm gonna read here. What's going on, okay? That's what I'm trying to say. And then it says the number of inhalations determined by the number of spokes in the wheel. The secondary force wave weaves itself under and over the radiating currents of primary force. Now the primary force is always from within, and the secondary forces are always from without. Okay, that's Pleiadian and Tibetan. Okay. The wavelengths are infinitesimal, probably thousands of them are included within one of the inhalations. As the forces rush around the vortex, the oscillations of different rays cross one another in this basket work fashion, producing a flower-like form, which I refer to the flower energy. It's the energy that mixes and actually turns into a flower. And if you were to look at what, like a systems 3 from the air, you'd see it looks like a flower, the way the energy works. And that's diagrammed in the back. And that's the first thing that the Dalai Lama said when he came to Hawaii in 1981 and physically witnessed and experienced one of our systems for the first time. That was his comment, and that's how he related to it. You buy these old Tibetan rugs, you know. This, I have some in my house. Look at those patterns in there. They're 1,000-year-old patterns. And you find them, they've been in Prussia, a different country, Persia rather, but they're Tibetan rugs. And those designs in there are the same designs that are manufactured by the way these radiators work, depending on how you program them. One will generate four spokes. Because you got one, like a T1 here, see how that shape is? It's this shape here because it only comes on this. This energy comes out here to a focal point from all these pyramids, and that focal point of the first is like T1, and then it goes back through the hole to the Yanan mantra to the aura field, and this picks up the aura field and programs the aura field very, very delicately, homeopathically or radionically, because, you know, in homeopathic medicine, the more it's diluted, the more power it has. So this defines one line of force, okay? Now, if you look at what a line of force is on an electronic level, if the electricity is going through a wire in a sound frequency, it's going back and forth, like that, 60 cycles per second, like in the power lines. If you start increasing the frequency of the electricity, and you get up to, you know, 1,000 cycles, it's a high-pitched whistle. If you get up to tens of millions of cycles, what happens is it's like a laser. The vibrations are so fast and so quick and so short that visible light is emanated, okay? All of these things take place in the body. They have to for you to interpret them taking place outside the body, okay? And what your body does is mixes the life force, and which is your interpreting factor, from within to what's without. So whatever you observe out there, you've got to be able to do it inside, you know? Anything like that. And that's where disciplines come into martial arts and yoga and all that kind of stuff, because certain disciplines are required until automatically, you know, like when you first learned how to read, it was a bitch probably, but after you got it down, it was easy, you know, and it took no effort at all. Same thing with this, you know, it takes time to learn it, but once you get a feeling for it, it's automatic. And that's when it becomes magical. Okay, so here we go. Now, here's the internal energy, the seven with phrase, you know, and here's the outside, meshing with the outside world. Boom. And this is called impact. At impact, energy is directed into four directions simultaneously, where it gradually dissipates into all cells at the region of impact, causing cell reproduction. Okay? This external force striking the cell on a DNA level. The DNA level is consciousness of the seven levels. In the four amino acids that give us the basic DNA are seven levels of consciousness. Funny that, you know, if you had an atmosphere and no amino acids, nothing would happen. But if you have an atmosphere with four basic amino acids, guanine, adenine, cytosine, and one other one, those four amino acids, it doesn't take eight, it takes only four. If those four amino acids are present, boom, electricity gets in the atmosphere and life will be created, okay? And then the other eight amino acids will come from those four. right through their own mitosis. And this is, so this is the DNA on a holographic level with knowledge of the universe at work when you start a planet, for example, with life force. And it's doing that continuously. What it did in the very beginning of creation is doing right now. Nothing's changed. Not a damn thing. But in the human body, it's doing it on a more integrated level. Instead of having one chakra like a single cell would have, now we got, you know, basically 7 conscious ones and 3 external ones, which are networking channels. So, you see what I'm saying here. The impact of the energy is directed in 4 directions. Tibetans, from a psychological view, call this the era of Lopika. So the Lopika lords, 4 recorders. How many of you heard of Babaji and Mataji? Okay? They are Lopika lords. They're 2 of 4, him and his sister. Okay? You know, Paramahansa Yogananda, Lahiri Lahasya, his guru, and the guy before him.
Your text man.
Yeah, Sri Yukteswar, yeah. They all 3 were perpetuates of Babaji and the energy, you know. In each one of these schools of thought, you know, Paramahansa Yogananda, he's got a beautiful center down here in Escondido. If you guys are out here and want to stay another day, you should drive down and check the center out. It's down on the south of Oceanside in Escondido down there. It's very beautiful. He was the first yogi to be received by an American president in 1929, Calvin Coolidge. And when he left his body in 1953, he had perfect control of it. He got 800 people together. He had Vinay R. Sen, the ambassador to India. He had, Goodwin Knight, our lieutenant governor there, California at the time. This guy was connected. He went right up on the stage and split out of his body. It's called conscious exit of the body. And he left his body. And the body stayed warm for 30 days. And it's in a crypt over in Forest Lawn. I don't even know if it ever decayed or not. This guy was amazing. I used to go out with his niece. She was one of my old girlfriends. So she used to sit on Yogananda's lap when she was a kid. So she told me all these Yogananda stories. It was great. But anyhow, these are some of each one of these schools of thought, like the Rajput school, and I studied with them, they taught me a lot about the life of Christ, you know, and what he really was all about. Because they have a different view of it than the theological people over here. Another thing was interesting, too, what the Dalai Lama said was that, when he discovered our systems, he said these are the law systems of the Vedas. And according to Dalai Lama, not only was the King James edition of the Bible edited, but so was the Bhagavad Gita, so were the Vedas, you know. Every damn religious book on the face of this earth got some major editing done by the dark side, the secret governments at the time, the clubs of Rome, you know, the people in Malta, all these different secret agent, you know, groups that have been, you know, the Club of Rome and all that's not recent. God, you can go back 1,000 years and find the same group of people that was founded the Nazi movement, Nazism, Karl Marx. They all have these deep roots in the same thing. Nothing has changed. These guys just kept incarnating and spreading their bullshit about, you know, putting out the light eternally, you know. And it's both sides of the fence, you know. It just continues on, both sides of the fence. You got the good guys and the bad guys. You got the white brotherhood and the black brotherhood. You know, it's endless. So anyway, so now we have this impact. Boom. The force of the impact caused cells to grow, and the shock of the impact. You know how you spank the baby, you know? Well, you're constantly spanking the baby with your body. And then when you quit spanking the baby, then you live longer. The force of the impact caused cells to grow, and the shock of the impact caused the force spokes to rotate like a wheel. The force of impact is called a strike. The area at which a strike occurs is called the struck zone. As the wheel rotates, remember we're talking about now the chakras. Some people have their chakras going backwards. Sometimes people are doing this backwards, you know. And then they're in real trouble. As the wheel rotates, it marries or balances the secondary or nervous energies in the body. See, the nervous system is the next thing that is fired off here. This is the source of the electricity because it possesses consciousness for the body. This intermingling is much like a weaver's pattern. These chakras naturally divide into 3 groups, the lower, middle, and the higher. They might be called respectively the psychological, personal, and spiritual. And they also correlate to the intellect, emotional, and physical of the circadian rhythms of the moon, which is the 28, 33, and 30-day cycle. They're all the same thing. the first and second, and also the three central nervous systems, the autonomic, parasympathetic, and sympathetic. Same thing, no difference. All these are interconnected, they're the same, the energies are the same, they have different connotations. And when you think of those three, Father, Son, the Holy Ghost working on those levels, then you know it's two males and a female. The female engulfs the other two, and then the female's the intellect, the other two are feeling, which is exactly the opposite of what goes on down here. Here, men do all the thinking, women do all the feeling, men learn to feel from the women. I mean, it's not done the way it should be. It's done backwards, as you would expect. And it sounds awkward to hear that, but it's true. Because the male ego doesn't want the way the ego is so insecure that they don't want the females to think. And the male sure as hell can't take the time to feel. That's beyond them. It's beneath them, you know. So, I mean, it's really funny. The first and second chakras, having but few spokes or petals, are primarily concerned with receiving the body two forces which come into it on the physical level, one being the serpent fire from the earth and the other vitality from the sun. In the morning, when you get up, the vitality globule is the most powerful energy of the sun. It's usually between about 10 o'clock, actually about 9 o'clock, and probably about 11:30. I don't know if you've noticed, if you ever lay in bed and just decide to take a half day off and go back to sleep and start kind of like sleeping, you'll have much more powerful dreams in the morning hours or during those times than you will at night. And they're a lot clearer and they're a lot more vivid. And in the pyramid, they're way more vivid. That's because it's the energy for that particular astral energy is much clearer at that than it is at night. The best time to do it at night is to stay up. I'm a night person. And what it is, you know, a lot of people will say, do you think that colors are assigned to chakras? No, they're not. Because the hydrogen atom is what a chakra is. So in the morning, you can bet that the will, your will to get out of bed or stay in bed and die, whatever you're going to do with yourself, is the first ray. And that's right up here in the pineal pituitary gland. So obviously, in the morning, the red is there and the violet is the base of the spine. But at night, when you're in meditation and you're really centering in that, what you're doing is you're bringing the violet energy, which is the base of the spine, up into your head chakra. Because now that, so it's reversed. So the violet energy's up there and you're hooking into it. And you're thinking about, you're recanting what you did during the day or what tonight's going to bring, what you're going to do tonight. Is the energy good or bad? So this is going on, which you sure as hell don't think about in the morning. So that's the hydrogen atom is rotating. So the idea is to realize what your polarity is, because you polarize that. And in other words, some of you are morning people, some of you are probably afternoon, some are night people. That's your polarity. That's where you really tap into the hydrogen atom. And that's the point that you start to work with yourself. And that's, it's like exercising, you know. Like sometimes I'll become a day person. I'll actually force myself to go to bed early at night and I'll get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I'll do a lot of stuff there. Just to kind of alter that. It depends on the time of year and what's going on. So you learn to run this energy and pull the most out of it. But you gotta realize what you're doing. A lot of people think it's not good to be, you should get up in the morning because everybody else does it. Bullshit, you know. You work your system the way it works. And if your system starts breaking down, you start getting sick with that routine, you break it and find what works. Get back in your synchronicity. So this is what the chakras is what it's talking about here, is doing that, you know. Okay. And it goes into the astral, we already covered that. Okay. Now, primary energy from the upper realm, discovered in the previous chapters, okay, the body, enters the body at the chakra point, strike zone, causing a shock, boom, it just hits, sort of repeats itself. The shock only lasts a split second, this actual shock of energy, only lasts a split second, but a lot happens. Namely, life is sustained in our bodies and gravity is created. Okay, so here we go back into this immediate point where the internal and external forces collide. Some of the energy balance is perfect at this collision point, sustaining life in the form while some energy collides with the form. So when you receive primary energy into your God-given spiritual energies, the seven levels receive the outside energy, some of it is in perfect harmony and some of it is a complete war zone. Okay? That's true of everybody. The energy is called strike zone energy and causes fusion of three etheric zones which, during the reaction, the four levels of solids are created. So in other words, remember on the physical plane, I said there's three etheric levels and four levels of solids making up seven levels of the physical plane. So now we're looking at this divine stuff And but at the same time, the first thing the body does is it's got a body there. It's a solid, it's a gas, it's the body, and there's etheric stuff going on. So the first thing that happens is the body at the lower chakra connects that up, you know, and then the higher stuff follows. This is the first part of what they're talking about. This is from Sannyasa here, by the way. This is her words, not mine. Okay, so this fusion of the solid and four levels of solid are created. So bam, that means cells are being split off, created, and mitosing. Although all form is created this way, the spirit enters through the chakras first. It is the molding essence. Okay? Energy constantly permeates all forms this way and forms patterns. And of course on the DNA level, that would be cells for the liver, cells for the heart, cells for the immune system. If viewed at various intersections, a stripe is a fusion pattern, and a network of stripes, several of them, can be visualized macroscopically as a pyridine orb or a carbon molecule. It looks like that. I mean, that orb up there is like what the energy is looking like inside. You have to imagine a bow on it. There's a picture of it in the book. But there's a bow, and there would be an eight-sided. One thing that the Andromedan explained to me. So if you'd have to measure, you know, if you were measuring this energy right here, and this with a dowsing rod, you'd feel the energy here, you'd feel the energy here. But when you combine it up like you see it here, the energy is going out and around like this, it's going out and around like that, down under here and out and around like that. Except the down under here, in this application, is being spread out. So this loop of energy, which would be like about this size here, on this one would be huge because you're in it, so it's engulfing you. Also realize that this right here is on the surface of the earth. Energy is coming at it from the Pleiades, wherever the Pleiades is, and other star system, and this is moving 1,000 miles an hour right now in this direction. So if it's moving from the west to the east 1,000 miles an hour, it's constantly hitting these points. You know, and this constantly creating that energy, and that happens in your body, and that happens in the hydrogen atom, and that's why it's so important to be used to it. Being in Laguna Beach, this happening, this versus going in 2 minutes to England, you'd have to readjust over there because it would be a different time of day, different frequency. You see what I mean? This is all about, this is what systems are about. Because what we're doing is duplicating on an external level what's already happening inside your body, and we're amplifying it a million times. Okay, let's see here. The stripe pattern, okay, the actual pattern now, this collision, is the orb. The individual collision is like a pyramid. The angle at which the collisions occur is always to the right, so it's seen as a series of crosses, okay, which is the magic of the crystals. And strangely enough, electricity flows through a wire, right to left, negative to positive. The orb is the framework of the strike and struck zones, forming all form as we know it. It also is the shape of the physical and etheric body relationship. It is a crystal. Remember, a crystal is a perfect synthesis of spirit and matter in zero time. Now it gets real interesting. Now, as a spirit, okay, so now what happens is the spirit was free flowing in and out of the body, okay? And that is like just before you're born even, or even after you're born. It's there, but it's not conscious very much, okay? Spirit is in and out of your body, not conscious. It's the outside energy that's striking the body, where the spirit is trapped, that's causing the animation of the form of the spirit. You follow what I'm saying? And so this is where people can go awry or anything else, depending on how they treat this, okay? As the spirit is trapped into the form to animate it, it awakens a spontaneous desire to return to its source. Spirit wants to go back. Hell, this damn thing. What it experiences the form feelings. Okay, it wants to, you get it's ecstasy. You know, you feel yourself. Oh, hell, let's just go. Forget this place. Yeah, I just want to feel like this all the time. You know, that's what it wants. Okay, it awakens a spontaneous desire to return to the source once it experiences the form refeeling. I mean, the Pleiadians can just say so much in so few words. If the form is clear, now look, we're talking the form body here, it's clear, and that's the big problem is keeping it clear, because the FDA and everybody wants you not to have a clear form, right? If it's clear and moving with the spirit, it becomes lighter, okay? That's like when I was learning to Gompa run. The more prana that I would take in, the more I'd animate my hydrogen, the lighter it would get. Because the purpose was just to travel, you know? And so, the desire, okay, becomes lighter. If he is caught in the desire of the lower nature, in other words, if the lower chakras are working harder than the top ones, you're out of balance, energy will be trapped and the form becomes heavier. And this is where you start gaining weight and getting heavier and, you know, like that. So it's your choice, you know? So it's a lot of balancing that you do here. This constant vacillation between the two natures constitutes gravity. Okay, so here's a real powerful statement. The nature of your body, the spirit wants to go back, you know, and become ecstasy. The body wants to hold it and make it eat it and make it, you know, and trap it and make it. So they got this war zone going on, and the fight for the spirit to go back and the form to hold it is gravity. That is gravity. And if you learn that, you know what gravity in the planet is. The planet's no different. It has a spirit too, you know. So if the cause and desire of the lower nature energy will be trapped and the form becomes heavier. The constant vacillation between the two natures constitutes gravity. Gravity is the interchange of energy from seven planes of consciousness. It is a mutual force causing a downward thrust of seven energies coming from the upward inward direction of spirit. A total synthesis would be either pure light or pure matter. Also occurring in the struck zone is some energy that has worked off karma or spent itself. Now remember about that now. You know, you create karma. Remember we talked about personality, right? Personality. You don't have one until you meet somebody, then you have one. Now you have karma, you know. Now how do you behave? The two of you unite in the form of a godlike union, or you go to war, you know, one or the other, you know. So also, this is karma. So we're assuming we're two people and we're working the godlike trip for this statement. Remember, energy is not destroyed or created, only transmuted. This coming and going in the struck zone creates a rhythm. So in other words, this energy coming in, this whole conflict taking place, the difference in the conflict is gravity, but the actual whole nature of itself creates a rhythm itself, the whole rhythm. Yes, no, more, friendly, and that rhythm is called time. Okay, it's defined as time. Time is the vibratory exchange rate of spirit and matter. Motion is the movement of divine will being split by desire. Gravity is the recombination of desire ascending to spirit after its expression through form. Anti-gravity detachment or impartiality is created by mind when it is disciplined to be free of desire, thus free of the time zone on a particular plane of consciousness. However, all time on all planes is impenetrable. Each of the seven planes has its own time zone. From our point of view, the higher the plane, the slower the time. Struck zone energy can be seen as fusion or the return of the kundalini as spirit releases itself into form, creating time. The law of inertia causes a downward flow and the effect is the attraction of the physical to physical, a sort of bonding action. In a highly developed individual, the organized force is in balance and moves out of and away from the physical and creates the anti-gravity state of consciousness. Control of this energy comes from the mind via the upper mental plane and the lower mind stands, when the lower mind stands aside, it allows the higher mind to reach the astral and physical bodies. So anyhow, you begin to understand, you know, you could read that over and over again and you'll start getting to understand how your spirit works with karma, how time is created in the different planes of consciousness. And so naturally, as we have this compression, as we move around the Pleiades, the mental plane is pushing itself down. It's a slower time. It's logical on the lower level, on the Rupa level, illogical on the higher level. It's pushing the astral plane, which is where we used to go escape. The physical plane is crashing down on the astral plane. The astral plane is forcing it down itself down on the physical plane, which is speeding up the struck vibratory rate, the spirit and matter, you know, the karma, everything is set up, which is compressing the physical plane. So what's going to happen when you got two or three planes of crushing down, trying to externalize themselves, take over the body, in other words, bring out this other energy, what happens to time on the lower plane? It's compressed, isn't it? So it speeds up. And that's exactly what's happening. time is going faster on the physical plane now than it used to. And you can see that because your consciousness is broader. You have a bigger picture now than you used to have. It's easier to develop this bigger picture. If this were 50 years ago and you were the same age, it would be harder to develop this picture that you have now because you wouldn't have all the tools here for that, for the expression available in vibration and frequency that you have now. Okay? So you have these tools, now you can use them. And each generation that comes is going to be a higher consciousness than the previous one. It's going to be you reincarnating back here, raising up to a higher vibration, and you're going to come around quicker and faster and cleaner, and this physical plane is going to disappear. And that's what it's doing now. It won't exist anymore. But it'll go in a natural way. And then we'll work on some other things, some higher planes. Okay? It'll appear physical, but it won't be anymore. And you won't know when that happens. It'll just happen one day. So that is a little bit of Death of Ignorance. This was written pre-1979. This is 1995. The new book I'm working on is a wild book. This one was pretty wild even now, you know. This is a good old Fumiasi. The Pleiadians are very clear. I don't know how much clearer you could define that, you know. When Dick Gregory read this, we were in Chicago one time, and he held this over his head. This is the Bible of the New Age, you know. That was just Fumiasi, a little scratch pad, you know. You guys all read this book and looked through it? It's a great source. It's a timeless book. It really is. I really enjoy this whole book. But it took me, I had to go 20 years to write the next one, because this was 20 years previous, you know. And I'm the kind of person that I'm a real slow learner. I mean, people think that I'm smart, but I'm really not. I'm really stupid. But I learn stuff, I learn it. You know what I mean? I don't pretend to know something. There's a lot of things I don't know, and when I don't know, I don't know. And I say I don't know. But if I know something, I know it pretty well. And the bottom line is that you become a student. You always be a student. As soon as you become the teacher, you start losing your own lesson plans. Believe me, the teacher trip does not work. It never worked for me at all. You know, I just am a student and share. But I've been studying things longer than most people. When I was 6, 7, 8 years old, what would that be? That was 43. In 1951, we had a laboratory in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I lived, Stephen Eberbaugh. And this is 1951, I was 8 years old. We were hooking electrodes to our brain. We had an oscilloscope in 1951, and we were putting electrical signals, you know, this right brain, left brain things that they have on the market now. We invented those in 1951. In 1952, we took a tackle box, a little fish, you know, where you put your little fish hooks in, and we got a little tiny old-fashioned. Remember, this is the day, in 1952, our portable radio was a crystal set with a thing you hook to the radiator of your house, you go full steam, and you listen to a headphone. In 1952, we got a transistor from Japan, and we made the first transistor radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Walked around with this little thing turned up so loud with a transistorized amplifier and the little earphone was broadcasting like a speaker, because in 1952 they didn't have little big speakers. They hadn't been invented yet. And we used to walk around and we used to go to this drugstore up there in Ann Arbor on Division Avenue and sit there. And I used to have the chocolate root beer and a cherry coke and listen to this radio full blast sitting on the counter. People would just stare. Stevie Eberbaugh and myself. And he was smarter than I was, you know. His dad owned a pharmacy chain. But here we were, as two young kids doing this stuff, you know. We had a blast in science. But in 1952, I had a radio, a regular tube radio, and we converted it to a transmitter. And it was transmitted on about 5 different frequencies, you know.
That's pretty much the end there, so we'll stop. We're running out of time, and that
even more wicked.
I'll repeat for a little bit from last week, so you get the whole picture. Anyway,
you can look at time